Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, a beautiful pair of planets to look for in the night sky, and a look at an animal underworld. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Sometimes people deal with some really intense animals in cities, like in Southeast Asia. There's poisonous snakes in the dumpster. I mean, there's pythons in the basement of the hotel. You know, something slips in because they smelled something that seemed edible. And that, to me, is endlessly fascinating.
That's artist Henry Rollins. More with him later about his new Nature television show. But first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
A new map of the human brain provides a clearer picture of how different areas of our brain are actually physically connected, and how these connections relate to how our brain works. University of Georgia researchers identified 358 landmarks throughout the brain related to memory, vision, language, arousal, and many other fundamental operations of the human body. The new map of the brain was published in the journal Cerebral Cortex.
After 35 years of searching the skies for signs of intelligence beyond Earth, astronomer Jill Tarter is stepping down as the director for the Center for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or SETI research. Tarter was the inspiration for Jodie Foster's character in the Carl Sagan movie Contact. She says she'll be taking on a full-time fundraising role for the SETI Institute.
Hurricane season 2012 officially begins on June 1st in the Atlantic, but we've already had our first named storm. Tropical Storm Alberto formed off the coast of South Carolina on May 19th and swept near the U.S. East Coast. This storm was never expected to make landfall, and it didn't, but it gave many a sky full of hurricane clouds and a glimpse of the season ahead.
In early May, citizen scientists reached a major milestone by contributing over 1 million observations on the environment to Nature's Notebook, an online observation program run by the U.S. National Phenology Network. This organization collects information on the annual timing of important life cycle events. For example, when birds migrate, when plants flower in the spring, and when leaves turn color in the fall. You can be a citizen scientist. For more information, come to earthsky.org and search for the words Nature's Notebook. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. This week's Song of the Week is by the Heartless Bastards. It's off their new album, Arrow, and this one's called Only For You.
Way about someone.
the band Heartless Bastards with this week's Song of the Week called Only For You off their new album Arrow. And we're Earth Sky. Artist Henry Rollins of the legendary 1980s punk band Black Flag has a new television program for National Geographic Wild called Animal Underworld. In it, Rollins explores why some people choose to come face to face with some of the world's most dangerous and disturbing animals, such as cobras and alligators. Rollins took time out from his busy performance tour to talk more about it. Mr. Rollins, welcome.
Thank you.
So what do you want to get across to people in your program, Animal Underworld, for National Geographic?
Well, we went all over the world looking at how different people deal with animals in their locality. And in America, we often deal with roadkill deer or the occasional exotic animal like a wolf or a bear. But in other parts of the world, the bears are used for their bile in Vietnam, illegally, but it still happens. Where we eat a lot of hamburgers in America and in parts of India, the cow is a worshipped and very sacred animal. And so we went to go bridge those gaps between humans and animals in that people do it anyway, and they always have, and they always will. I think humans have a natural curiosity as to what goes on in the animal world, hence our fascination with pets, zoos, and trying to get across to them, like, you know, this elephant is my friend, or I'm going to touch the bear because the bear understands me. So, you know, these incredible misconceptions are very interesting to me. Mankind tries to tame its environment, which to me is always fairly insane. Because in any natural climate you find yourself in, you will see that you're the one who's sticking out. You're the one who doesn't fit in. And in that, the animals are very well suited to their environment. It's you who's, you know, putting up your mosquito nets.
Yeah, and I was interested to see how you chose to focus. You didn't go out to the wild to look at these animals. You kind of looked at how people relate to them in cities.
Exactly. And we went out in some rural areas as well. But again, you know, humankind always tries to tame its environment. Rarely do humans live in harmony with their environment. They cover it with concrete. And that's just what we do. I'm not putting us down. I'm just saying, you know, look at the city around you. It's got, you know, you're sitting in a building. There used to be something else there. And so sometimes people deal with some really intense animals in cities, like in Southeast Asia. You know, there's pythons in the basement of the hotel. You know, something slips in because they smelled something that seemed edible. And that, to me, is endlessly fascinating.
Mr. Rollins, what do you remember most about the people who live with these animals that you've explored in your program, Animal Underworld, such as the snake charmers, alligator wrestlers? What do you remember most about some of these people that you met?
Well, casualness and the utilitarian nature of how they deal with the animals, you know, in their locality, just what they mean to them, and just how you and I would maybe pull back with the idea of a cobra coming out of a bag. But for the guy who's going to butcher the cobra and serve it, it's as much repulsion as someone might have if they see a chicken getting cleaned, you know. And so just to see how people just get on with things, and how much you are taken aback, and these people look at you like, what's his problem? As they just kind of get on with something that you find exotic, and they find to be just, you know, incredibly ordinary.
These explorations, looking at the underworld of animal handling, these seem tied into your own personal, I guess, what seems like a quest to explore the world.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I do a lot of traveling. And quite often I find myself in environments where I'm dealing with, you know, some interesting animals very up close and personal. And that to me is always interesting, because I'm not afraid of these animals. I'm not, you know, some tough guy or anything, but I'm just, you know, really not afraid. I'm more curious than anything. And so my curiosity gets me into some very interesting situations. And if you watch these three specials on Nat Geo Wild, you'll see these very unscripted, you know, these encounters with everything from hogs to snakes to alligators to cows and everything in between, and eating rats in southern India, eating snakes in Vietnam, and on and on. And, you know, I stay open-minded, and whenever I go into any culture, I'm trying to learn a thing or two, because I'm the outsider. I'm the one in need of an education. And so I go into these environments, you know, with a very open mind, and you have to do a lot of work at times to get your head around what you're about to do. Like, we're eating rats now. Okay, it's meat, grain-fed and hormone-free, but it's a rat. And it's interesting, you know, because I'm not the most acclimatized to these environments all the time, so I'm sure there's probably some humor.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It's hard to laugh, I guess, in a sense. I mean, I was fascinated to see you wrestle an alligator, and I mean, this thing looks pretty dangerous.
It's completely equipped to ruin you. I mean, these are very capable animals, and they're very aware of their environment and what they can do with their body. I mean, reptiles are very capable survivors. Basically, their use-by date has long gone, and so they have become, through time, snakes and crocodilians, very agile and stealthy hunters. And if you think you're just going to walk up and get one or be able to overpower it, it knows its body very, very well, and it might just flip you over, and all of a sudden you have a very real problem on your hands. So, you know, I did it. It was more adrenaline than a boy needs, but you got to get the shot.
Speak to this fascination that some people have with being close to these animals, alligator handlers in the Everglades, Florida, the Seminole Indians, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, speak to this fascination that we here in the U.S. don't typically think of as pets, these animals. When we think of animals that we're close to, cats and dogs maybe, but you're talking about alligators, cobras, that you explored in Animal Underworld.
Well, I think humans are always trying to bridge the gap between themselves and their environment. And it's why we have domesticated some animals over hundreds of years in strategic breeding. You know, you have dogs that are bred to be friendly. And so our idea of animals are, you know, cuddly things that, you know, we make into Hallmark greeting cards. And the rest of them we fear or we look at in awe from the safe confines of a cage in a zoo, or when they're made to do something at a circus. And we're shocked when the elephant stomps on the owner's head, or the grizzly bear turns on its owner and tears its head off, or when the kid sticks his hand through the bars of a zoo and gets his hand bitten off by a wolf. The wolf is killed because it did some crime. You know, it did a bad thing. Well, biting a kid is a bad thing, but it's doing what comes natural to it. And so I think humans in different localities are always doing their version of trying to equalize, trying to find balance. And how do you find balance, like in a place like Kenya, when you're a Maasai, when outside of your gated community, your village, which is literally fenced in, because you and your cows sleep at night hoping the lions and hyenas and leopards don't consume you and your animals. And so humans learn to deal with against insurmountable odds. And when you go into these environments, the thing that keeps striking me over and over again is the most endangered species on the planet is man. In that if you're on the Serengeti at sundown without a Jeep or a lot of bullets, you're probably not getting to sunup.
Well, thanks for taking this time out. It's my final question. Thanks. What's the most important thing you want people today to know about Animal Underworld?
Well, that there's nothing to fear, and that, as always, in anything, you know, from education to animals to the economy, more understanding is necessary, and chances are you don't know nearly enough. So, you know, you can always learn a little more. And what we do at Nat Geo Wild is to try to bridge that gap between the understood and the misunderstood and the non-understood. And that's what we're after, and I think we hit it.
Mr. Rollins, thank you for speaking with us today.
No problem. Thank you.
Artist Henry Rollins. His TV show Animal Underworld premieres Memorial Day, Monday, May 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern on National Geographic Wild. We're Earth Sky, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky. Two planets to look for in the coming week. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. So these two planets are Venus and Mars. And let me talk about Venus first. Venus is still in the west after sunset, but it's very, very low in the western sky after the sun goes down. It's getting ready to pass between the Earth and Sun on June 5, 6, depending on your location on the globe. And when it does that, it's going to do a really cool event, the last transit of Venus in this century. So I'm not going to talk about that now. We'll talk more about that next week. But if you want to come to earthsky.org and search for that, you'll find information on the Venus transit on June 5, 6. For now, for folks looking in this week, just look for Venus in the west after sunset. It's a really special time to see it, right before it passes between the Earth and Sun, getting ready to drop into the Sun's glow.
Awesome. So, planet Venus is going to pass in front of the sun, this transit of Venus. We'll be talking about that more later. But this is a great time to see Venus near the horizon. Is that right?
That's right. It's in a twilight sky. Right after sunset, you're going to be looking toward the west, look in the direction of the sunset, and Venus is just above the sun. And it's really cool to stand on here on planet Earth and look at Venus just above the sunset and to realize that in early June, it's going to be passing between the Earth and sun.
Incredible. What else have we got?
So the planet Mars is also up in the evening sky, and Mars is a good thing to look for this week because it's going to be near the moon, and it's going to be near the moon on May 28th and 29th. So we passed between Mars and the sun in early March, and Mars was at its brightest for the year then. In fact, it was at its brightest for 2 years then because Mars is on about a two-year cycle. But Mars is still pretty bright this month, in the month of May 2012, and reddish in color and noticeable near the moon on the 28th and 29th.
That little glowing red dot near the moon is the planet Mars.
That's right. And there's another bright object also near the moon on the 28th and 29th. That's the star Regulus and the constellation Leo. If you wait until the moon moves away and you look at that very same time of night, you can continue to notice Mars because it's near that bright star Regulus. You can tell Mars from Regulus because Mars is reddish in color while Regulus is a blue-white star. And of course, as a planet, Mars doesn't twinkle as much as the stars do. It shines more steadily. So look for Mars on the 28th and 29th.
Yeah, this is great. This is great news for sky watchers who don't need to, who don't want to stay up late at night to look for things that are going on. These are things that are happening early evening and as night falls.
That's right. And there's actually a third planet that's in the evening sky now. That's the planet Saturn. It's a lot harder for me to tell you how to find it because it's not going to be near the moon or anything. But it is near a bright star, the bright star Spica. So it's up there. If you come to earthsky.org and search for Saturn, you can find some charts that'll tell you how to find it.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at Earth Sky Studio B in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, The Heartless Bastards, Okote Soul Sounds, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But what we don't know